Welcome to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis, Episode 4, Blue Tongue. New odours filtered through the tree wall, colouring the edges of Blue Tongue's scentscape with a vision of something approaching beyond the beechwood and willow bulwark. The scent source came slipping between the sweet stems of stitchwort and horseshoe vetch, infiltrating the bloodwood's border with a musk half hidden among the earliest blooms of white clover. It was the scent of a different bloodwood, the pollen of a different forest on the fur of a different body. There was the smell of badger and boar, but most of all, there was fox. The shadow of the company had been spotted a little after noon by squirrels working on the highest branches of the tree wall, a shifting stain on the rolling hills of the Great Land. It had crept closer from the direction of Smallwood until it reached the base of Cold Mountain, where it began the slow climb towards Highwood. By the time the rumours filtered down to Blue Tongue and the other rootsmiths, a message had already been sent to the nearest Heart of the King, a badger called Tree Tail, who was infamous in his distaste of hind-marked creatures. Last time he had been obliged to take a tour of the tree wall, both Blue Tongue and Snowtip had had the misfortune of meeting him. When he had hastily given them the blessing of thanks for their improvements to the root work, it was clear that he had no idea he was blessing members of two different species, using the same generic sign of weasel for both the ermine and the mink. Blue Tongue had been happy to busy himself in the root pit when they came looking for volunteers to update the old badger on the shadow's steady progress. Now that same force was so close that Blue Tongue could make out the individual animals among their number. It was a delicately chosen delegation, large enough that it honoured the three-horn summons with representatives from every Highmark family in Applewood, but still not great enough that it could be misinterpreted as a threat to the new King of Highwood. The Applewood foxes no doubt deserved their reputation for diplomacy. "A big group of foxes like that can only be trouble," signed Snowtip, where they were working in the root pit. "You can't trust a fox," he explained, shaking the soil from his fur. The earth of Highwood was gentle, a heady mulch of leaf mould, almost stoneless from 100 generations of careful maintenance, and it slipped from the mink's fur like water. The old green mason sent Blue Tongue a picture of beasts the size of wolves, burning red like sunrise, assaulting the tree wall and picking off hind-marked animals left and right. Blue Tongue snorted politely, climbed to the edge of the pit, and found a gap in the tight-knit mesh of branches to catch a glimpse of the approaching forces. The foxes of Applewood, like their Brightwood cousins, were subtle warriors who preferred hunting from the shadows to outright battle. But the wide, rolling hills of the Greatlands afforded few places to hide. The formation of the approaching host was tight and alert. Pigs pushed themselves to the front as they came close to the boundary of the tree wall, snouts to the ground to pick up any scent that could reveal the paths that might lead them through the tree wall. Back with the bulk of the travellers, Blue Tongue could discern a small scattering of smaller animals like himself, a handful of badgers among the foxes, and a couple of stags on the farther edges, no doubt emissaries of the three-horn sent to guide the troop to one of the tree wall's crossing places. Without such guides, the host would simply wash up against the tight woven trunks like water against the great stone of Bush Hill River. "Watch what they do when they hit the wall," signed Snowtip, chirping proudly. Neither of them had been alive when the son of Sixclaw had begun to enclose his bloodwood, but they tended the roots of the tree wall with the same degree of reverence as the green masons of the blood oak itself. They were proud to see their work tested against the forces of another bloodwood, when such a challenge would not be followed by outright conflict. "There," signed Snowtip, nose stretched to where the applewood host was pressing against the woven trunks. "They don't know what to do," he signed, his forepaws pumping the air with a glee that made him appear years younger. Sure enough, the Applewood hogs were lapping against the tree wall, helpless against the leafy fragrance of mugwort, ground ivy, and sweet woodruff that grew along its base. The foxes at the front of the formation wandered among them uneasily, failing to find any hidden spot among the mesh of branches where they might make shelter from unseen eyes. The main host settled itself at a respectable distance and waited. Blue Tongue sent Snowtip a picture of the edge of the tree wall floating on a bed of purple blooms, the perfume of tricolour sage cushioning the sap-serrated scentscape.
"Too tall," sighed Snowtip, dismissing it. "Too easy to hide in."
"But it would be beautiful," sighed Blue Tongue. "And I think the soil's too rich for the mugwort." Snowtip gave another dismissive puff.
"The Herbrites know what they're doing," he sighed. "Though I wouldn't mind if they got rid of the ground ivy. I have to spend half a morning unbinding it from the upper roots before I can even see what I'm working with."
"You think they'll come up this far?"
"No," sighed Snowtip. "They'd have made a full circuit if they were serious."
"They haven't bought many fighters," sighed Blue Tongue. Snowtip snorted.
"Don't need to," he sighed. "They'll tie you up with their sign words the moment you look at them."
"That's not true," sighed Blue Tongue.
"There's a reason they've been able to wait this long before coming to take the mark of that three-horn," Snowtip chirped. "Unlike you and me," he added, slapping Blue Tongue on his hindmark.
Blue Tongue snapped back playfully, and the two of them tumbled over each other and into the pit in a tangle of body and fur. For a moment they fought among the roots in a frisson of breath and spittle, caking themselves in the crumbling earth, but a scampering of activity around the rim of the pit brought them back to ground level. Ermine, mink, pine martins, and other hindmarked creatures were scrambling from the root pits. Mice slipped from the tunnels. Squirrels bounced to solid ground and scampered over the naked gap that stood between the tree wall and forest, found the trunks of blood-marked trees, and disappeared into the lower branches. Snowtip caught the attention of a pine martin named Redneck to see what was going on. Blue Tongue didn't watch their conversation, distracted by a root tendril they had knocked in their play. It was twisted out of place and would grow at the wrong angle if left untended. He hooked a claw around the root and wound it back along the larger guide root, clearing away a few strands of mugwort at the same time. A light tumbling of earth told him Snowtip was back.
"The three-horn wants the brightwood graftlings lit," sighed the old mink. "Redneck says they've been forcing the flowers to blooming point for a couple of days now. Are you coming?"
Blue Tongue sent Snowtip a picture of his last inspection of the brightwood stumps. Wet moss bound the brightwood branches to the rootstocks. Beneath the wet moss, there was little sign the skeans had much strength left in them.
"They're hawthorn," sighed Snowtip. "They'll take eventually, given a bit of time."
"They're too young to force," sighed Blue Tongue.
Snowtip snorted. "Maybe," he'd. "Not like we can stop it."
Beyond the willow leaf of the tree wall, the hogs of Applewood were heading back to the main company. The fox scouts lingered a little longer against the tree wall, and then, one by one, drifted back to the main group to await their hosts.
"Do you think the three horns here?" asked Blue Tongue.
There was part of him that wanted to see what the great stag would do when he welcomed his visitors. Blue Tongue had missed the arrival of the Blackwood Badgers, who had travelled down from the north with a troop of wolves big enough to take half of Highwood in one day. That time, the treehorn had strolled out past the tree wall with no guard, utterly unintimidated by the horde, which had parted like clouds around Cold Mountain to let him through. Already there were songs about it.
"Highmarked creatures meet every day," sighed Snowtip, pulling at the ermine. "But how often does a greenmason get to see a brightwood branch bloom in Highwood? Imagine that."
Blue Tongue sent an image of a thousand brightwood flowers bursting into life for a moment and then wilting dramatically into darkness.
"Have a little faith," sighed Snowtip,
nuzzling into his companion, smelling of oat root and mudflower and earth. Blue Tongue felt him send a picture of the forest alight with flowers in the dark. the deep forest beneath the bloodwood tree, the delicate scattering of graftlings with their dark, alien stems and tiny flowers driving back the night, illuminating the leaves of the giant blood oak from below as though heaven and earth had been reversed. It had been Greypaw, the great bear, who had been the one to dream of a highwood where there would always be light beneath the branches. He wanted the forest to glow from sundown to dawn, to be a star on the mountainside. The great bear had bloodwood branches carried from the other side of the kingdom to grow here, on good highwood rootstock. The Threehorn could have taken Greypaw's dream and smashed it like he smashed the great bear's skull, ripping the saplings from their stumps and casting them into Long River as a sign to all other bloodwoods, but he didn't. And so the graftlings continued to grow in Highwood, and the Bear King's dream of eternal daylight beneath the blood oak became the Threehorn's own promise to his people. They were the Threehorn's flowers now, and they would be beautiful, if they survived the first bloom. Blue Tongue let Snowtip's picture drain from him and came back to the real world. He opened his eyes and saw a squirrel, frozen in its descent from the tree wall, its eyes fixed on the embracing couple. Snowtip saw it too, and snarled so sharply that the Green Mason shot down the final few feet of the trunk and sprinted off into the forest without a look back over its shoulder. The mink and the ermine watched the forest, but the squirrel did not reappear. "You know who that was?" signed Blue Tongue. Snowtip snorted again. "Why?" he signed. "Planning on poisoning his blood fruit?" Blue Tongue spat in annoyance. "You saw what Ragtop did to Ashfoot," he signed. "That squirrel couldn't walk for a month." "One day you'll get caught." "It was a slither of panther cap," signed Blue Tongue. "It's not deadly." "So it was you," signed Snowtip, as he returned to the root pit to correct Blue Tongue's binding. Blue Tongue watched the old master work. If the brightwood saplings bloomed tonight, he thought, there'd be little chance that many would survive to bloom again. A legion of Green Masons would have to sulk back to Brightwood, wasting 3 moon cycles getting there and back and exhausting themselves in the process, and it would be years before any Brightwood branch would bloom again in Highwood. Blue Tongue was young enough, but Snowtip had already seen 10 summers. If Blue Tongue were ever to see the Brightwoods bloom again, it would not be with the mink. He pulled back Snowtip's attention with a quick, excited trill. "Okay," he signed, taking a jump towards the forest edge. "Let's go and see what happens." You've been listening to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. To learn more, visit olliefrancis.co.uk, where you can discover how to support the project and influence where the story's going. Until then, may the gods always hear your song.